And welcome to the Radical Trannies. I'm your host, Ethan St. Pierre. And with us, we have Marty Abernathy. How are you doing today, Marty?
Great. Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm resting up from the fabulous election.
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Oh, wasn't that fantastic? I'll tell you, it was. I had drank, as a number of people did, drank a lot of coffee to, figuring it was going to be a long haul, and we'd, be up for a while counting votes, and, it'd be a nail biter. It wasn't even close, and I loved it. At 11 o'clock, by 11 o'clock, they called the election, and it was all over. And what a wonderful feeling it was, to see him get into office, to see Obama be elected president.
Yeah, and you know, what really surprised me in that was because, I've done a lot of work with the campaign, and I thought, man, I'm really happy that this is over with and that we were successful. But what I really didn't think about, but what I saw there, because I was down at the Indiana Democratic Party's watch party, and there's a large African-American contingent in Indianapolis and in Indianapolis politics. And just to see the faces of African-Americans when it was announced that he won, it was the most thrilling thing I think I've ever experienced.
Yeah, it was... It was really bizarre because even watching television, it was one of those things that it hit me like, oh, of course, but it didn't. Through this whole process, I honestly, and I know that there were fights over race and the whole nine yards, but I really wasn't even considering it. I just wasn't considering race as being an issue. And I realize, of course, that I was always pissed off and aggravated when somebody tried to say, well, he's not going to get elected to president because Americans aren't ready for an African-American to be the president and blah, blah, blah. It just never occurred to me how the African-American community would be so obviously moved by that. And, of course, it would be like a trans person being elected president or us finally getting our rights or –
Well, it was like you could see a weight lift up off of their shoulders.
Yeah, it was really an incredible thing to watch. And I'll tell you, it was just, it made me cry. It was very moving to the point where, and I know you and I talked about this, but I didn't tell you that. It made me cry. Listening to his acceptance speech was extremely moving for me. And it was such a relief to know that we have somebody in office that's reasonable and that's for civil rights. That it was just no more of this, of the regime, of the Bush regime. And it made me just, feel so relieved and honestly proud of our country at that point. Very proud of our country.
Yeah. I have to say, this is the first time in a long time that I'm proud of this country. I think Michelle got in trouble for saying that, this is one of our shining moments.
Yeah, it is. It is because, it's, I think it's, it just, of the one of the first times in history. It's the first time on such a level as this that it was that people looked past color, looked at issues, and really looked at the person and their qualifications and what they could do, and went on that.
This is the first election that I can remember where I can tell you right now the reason why Obama won. I'll let the cat out of the bag now that it's over with.
Because we voted for him?
Because I voted for him, yeah, of course. But, no, it had to do with, and I call it rope-a-dope, is what he did. You had two candidates in the primary. I mean, you had the Hillary Clinton in the primary, and you had John McCain in the general election, and they both used the same tactic. They both were politicians of attack and of personal destruction of their opposition. You know, I mean, Hillary said that he was a plagiarist, and I mean, she was there to tear him down. And that didn't work for her. The people right now do not want that. They want to be inspired. They're scared.
Well, they're tired of the bashing, of the idiocy, of the politics level, of the past.
There's a certain level of that negative campaigning that normally works, but we are in a crisis. We are in a really scary place. You know, we're on the verge of, people won't call it a depression, but we're on the verge of a severe recession that is going to possibly mimic the destitution and the loss of income for people. That it's not really going to be a depression per se, in what a depression is defined as, but it's going to sure as hell look like one.
Well, right, and it's more about this campaign was more about not what the other person can't do, but what I can do.
Yes, it was a campaign, and it truly was a campaign of hope.
Yeah, and it was a campaign of can do. It was the yes we can.
Yes, yes, and that was, you know, when I say rope a dope. He just basically let John McCain beat up on him, and you'd hear people, even in the community, would say, I wish he would be stronger on him. I wish he would come back and nail him with this and nail him with that, but he didn't. He just sat back and took it, and people saw that as presidential. And they saw John McCain as being negative. They saw Hillary as being super negative, and that's not what the country needs right now. That's not what the people's mood is right now, and he was the president for this time. So there's a euphoria that goes with winning this election, but there's also the reality after the fact of what comes next.
Well, there's a lot of work to do.
You're carrying the, maybe not Sarah Palin, but there's a guy here in Indiana that's super, 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 super Republican. His name is Mike Pence, and they're talking about him being the third most powerful person in the Republican Party in the House. And the guy is really, really scary. So, I mean, the Republican Party isn't going to go more towards the center. It doesn't look like. It looks like they're going to go more to the right.
Right.
Which there's a good and a bad part of that. I mean, Bill Clinton got nailed with that. And he's because he wasn't ready.
Well, there's a lot of issues with Bill Clinton. He made a lot of promises that he never kept, and he acted more like a Republican in office than a Democrat, frankly.
But he did, because he was essentially Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are opportunists of the time.
Right, exactly.
And you have to be a politician of sorts, but they did it more than anyone that I've seen, and I don't think that this is going to be cakewalk for him. I do think he has some political capital, but you have to remember, even though he won resoundingly, there's still a large portion of the country that didn't vote for him.
Well, and they were the fiscally conservative people that absolutely believed that. Well, some of them were fiscally conservative, I have to say this, and others were. I actually heard people in the supermarket just talk about issues like abortion, and not, you know, and not even what's going on with our economy. And say, well, this is what he's for, so I can't vote for him because it's not blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God, you know, why? I mean, I liked him because he was well-rounded in his political stances, not because he was just in favor of the issues that I hold near and dear to my heart, but because I thought he was well-rounded on all of the issues that I care about, not just a singular issue. So that was really why I voted for him. It's, you know...
I mean, there's a large section of the population that didn't, and those people still have representation.
Right. I mean,
you know, they still have people in Congress that support them, or they support the congressmen to support them. You know, and they represent their point of view, and that isn't going away. Is there going to be some magic formula where Obama just can do anything he wants?
No. And I don't believe that at all. And I think that he's going to be very cautious on social issues, and very and concentrate. This is just my opinion. Cautious on social issues and focus on getting the economy back up. Because let's face it, as much as I'd love to have,
I don't see him taking on any GOP stuff.
Well.
Year or two.
Well, because if he did, it would be, and you know, excuse me for thinking this, but the state that our country is in, what difference would it make if we had employment equality if we didn't have jobs to go to?
Right.
You know,
that's
true. So I think that if, you know, to if we all band together, concentrate on getting our economy back up.
I guess what I'm getting at, though, Ethan, is I don't fear what he's going to do. I don't fear what he's going to do. I fear that the people are caught up in this moment, and it's a joyous moment. It's a beautiful moment.
Right.
But, you know, it's already time that we just say, that's great, it's historic, it's wonderful, but we need to move on, and we need to start focusing in on what we need to do, what we need to focus on, and how we attain our own power.
Well, one of the things also, Marty, is the idea, first of all, that we have a lot of freshman congressmen. And that means that it's up to us to educate those new congressmen and get them ready for when a new bill comes up, or to get them on board with LGBT issues as a whole. So it's up to us to do that work. And you're right. I mean, there's going to be, I want to put this out there for folks to understand this too. There's a conference. An IFGE conference is the first week in February of 2009, and Marty and I are going to give a presentation, a workshop, on building power base for transgender people. Because if we don't do that, we're going to be just as irrelevant in 2012 as we were in 2008. And that means having other people speak for us, and they're still doing it, and it's our own fault. We have to take responsibility for our inaction and start stepping up to the plate, period.
And yeah, that's at the core. I mean, you have a distinction in our community and in the greater GLBT community. that's been set in motion by organizations that will talk about full inclusion, but aren't really working toward.
Right.
And so while we need to partner with organizations that truly, if one would pull them apart, are gay and lesbian organizations.
Well, our allies are wonderful.
We should throw the baby out with the bathwater, but it's the same way in the bigger politics with the Democrats and the different parts of the Democrats. We cannot give up our convictions, but we also have to be flexible enough that we work with the people where we can.
Right, but it's working with.
The majority of the work is ours.
It's working with, not getting driven by. And,
right.
And you know, I don't want to be a passenger in the vehicle to LGBT equality. You know, that's to trans equality. I'm not a passenger in that vehicle. We want to be driving that car. And it's up to us to do that. We cannot allow our allies to drive to obtain equality for us. It's not fair to us, and you know, it's really not fair to them either.
Are one community. We've been told that.
Well, we are one community. That's wonderful. Then walk with us, not you know, don't pull us along in a cart and direct us where we need to go. We need to be driving our own community. And instead of people telling us which way we should go, where to sit, where to stand, how to act, how to – all of it, we have to do this ourselves. We love the support. We love you all for the support. The gay and lesbian community is wonderful. But we cannot have the gay and lesbian community lead us by the nose. We can't, because it's not working. Our needs are just a little bit different. And we need to address that.
Well, and to me, it's part of being mature. It's when you grow as a human being. I mean, just, you know, when you're a teen, you need your parents and your husband. But there's a certain point in your life where you go out and do things for yourself. And if you don't, if you're one of those 40-year-olds that's sitting at home at your mom's house, you're looked at as being immature and being lazy.
And
I think the fact that we aren't doing for ourselves shows a lack of maturity.
And exactly, so building a power base. So this is one of the workshops that's going to be offered on a Wednesday. It will be February 4th, and Marty and I are doing this workshop on how to build a power base, why we need to build our own power base, and where we're going with that. We're not offering a problem. We're offering the solution as well. So we're exposing the problem and our weaknesses and then offering up a solution. We need to work together as a community, and the people that don't want to work together, we just have to work around you. I'm sorry. It's been too long, and it's been a rough road, and now we have the opportunity to really make things happen, and we're going to do it with or without you.
That's right. And, you know, it's something that for the longest time I thought, it's something I wish someone else would do.
Oh, you know, nobody really wants to be the one, because you know what, when all eyes are on you or your ideas, and there are many other ideas out there. We want them all. It's not like we're saying this is the only idea that's possible and to hell with you all. That's not it. We want to work with absolutely everybody. We just don't want to work with obstacles. I mean, we're going to have obstacles, but like I said, with or without you, we're going there. So you can either work with us or we'll just work around you. And
that's been the biggest realization in this whole process through the election. That's what has really been hitting me hard, is that things that I don't like, the only way that I can change them is if I have the power to change.
Right.
And no one's going to give me that power. I have to go and take it.
That's right. That's right. We have to take it.
By waiting for men to give it to them.
That's right.
Get equality for 100 years.
Yep. That's right.
And because no one was going to give it to them, and they went and took it.
You know, I really have to say that, you know, when this whole presidential race began and Hillary was still in the running, the transgender community really stood firm behind Barack Obama. And I've been a supporter of his right from the beginning. I never supported Hillary Clinton. Not that I wouldn't have if she became the candidate, because I'm a Democrat and that's the way that it works. And I have to really, you know, say kudos to the people that were Hillary supporters. When she dropped down, they picked right up, got right behind Barack Obama and said, okay, now this is what we have to do. That's the way it works in politics. But in that time, you know, you get that whole power base, the money base, we can do this and get our own power base within the Democratic Party and use that to propel ourselves to the next level in our movement. We have to do that. There's no two ways about it. And Marty was the one that brought that to my attention.
You it's not something that we're saying.
Yeah, it's not it's not like this was a brain. Say that again, sorry.
I said that's something that Barney Frank is saying. We haven't done the work.
Well, that's that was for something else. That was the lobbying stuff and all of that. And that's on the same line, but a separate issue along that line.
But he was separating us as a community.
Right. He was separating our community. And, you know, here's the thing. During this whole election process, the Democratic Party separated us and pretty much was pulling us and telling us, well, you should do this and you should do that, and didn't give us a choice, but told us this is what we are doing. And you know what is going to happen next time? Not that.
I agree.
Not that. We're going to do it ourselves. Thank you very much for pointing us in the direction and giving us an idea of what not to do next time. But, you know, Marty, you went through this process, and thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for the work that you've done with the Democratic Party and all the Marty called me many times out going door to door. Doing all of these things for the Obama campaign, and it was absolutely wonderful. Went to you're a delegate from Indiana, went to the Democratic National Convention. All of these things were phenomenal, and you learned the things that you know we needed to do to help us propel ourselves into the future. And that is a wonderful thing. You know, and I know that there are many people out there that will agree and do the things the next time. And you're right. This isn't like this was something that we sat down and had to brainstorm about. It was very evident that these were the things that needed to be done to get us to the next level for the next election, because we need to be recognized politically as a group. And we have to do the work. That's it.
And that's only going to happen through through us having our own power. And, you know, recently I've been thinking a lot about how we're looked at in the community.
Right.
We're second fiddle, we really are.
Well, and I don't even think that we're second fiddle. I think that we're the dirt in the corner where the fiddle was sitting.
It's just that we're not thought about in terms of, it's kind of like when you mention trans people in the mix of gay and lesbian issues, they're like, oh yeah. Well, that's what I meant.
Right. Now, you know,
it's from bills that are getting put out here that aren't inclusive, you know, to just naming your organization and calling it a gay and lesbian organization.
Yep. You know, I sent you earlier, and this is along those same lines, a very interesting story from Bay Windows, who said the topic of the conversation was, what can we expect from an Obama administration? And it was extremely interesting because the organizations that were interviewed in this was the Human Rights Campaign's Joe Solmanese, and their legislative director Allison Hurwitz, who is a Republican, by the way, and Ray Carey, I mean NGLTF's Ray Carey, and not one person from a transgender organization was interviewed concerning where we were going to be. I mean, SLDN was interviewed. Not one transgender organization or one person from one transgender organization was interviewed and asked about this, about where we thought we were going to be and, you know, where we were going and what can we expect from the Obama administration. No transgender person was interviewed. And that's extremely telling. What this says, and this, by the way, was from a person in Bay Windows, Ethan Jacobs, who's extremely trans-friendly. But what he doesn't see is any of the transgender community as being a leader or a factor in this movement. And that's extremely telling. So what we got, though, is Joe Solmanese already trying to set the pace for our agenda during this administration. And, you know, that's something that's just not going to happen. No longer are we going to look for a gay and lesbian organization to set the agenda for the trans movement, and we are going to go out there and do this. So you can join us. We would love that. And help the movement.
And be a part of us.
Be a part of it. Exactly. Stop sitting there wringing your hands, calling people up, asking them what they think about it. The question is, what do you think about it?
Yes. And you know, we're not going to give you stickers. We're not going to put them on the back of your car to make you feel good about yourself. We do need money in this movement. But what we need more than that
is action.
Movement. Yep. Is action. And that's vital. That's yep. Vital because I want to use myself as an example. Believe it, I know people, I was talking to Ethan today about this. People might find it hard to believe that I'm a very private, I'm a very shy person. And when I started doing this stuff, it was out of a sincere conviction for change that I wasn't seeing anyone else do. And I just wanted to be a part of the movement for change. But what I started seeing was there was nobody doing the work. And knowing that that's the case, that's my focus here on having a structure for us to do the work.
Yep. And it's not about reinventing the wheel. We realize that people have come before, that there have been organizations in place for a very long time. So we have to think about, you know, what we it's not what they're not doing. It's about what we need to do, period.
But Ethan, I'm not someone special, and I want people to fucking realize that. I'm just Joe Schmo from Indiana.
Oh, James Schmo.
Exactly. And anyone can do this. Anyone can take part. It's not hard.
It's not rocket science. Hang on, Marty. I got to plug in the phone here. Just a second. Yep, it's not rocket science. None of this is difficult. And here's something that you can do that doesn't cost you anything, in fact. You can go to your brand new elected senate office or representative's office in your state, and you can introduce yourself and offer to educate their brand new staff on transgender issues. And that's something that will be invaluable to us when we do go to Washington, D.C., because they can say, yes, I met with so-and-so from Houston, Texas. Or, well, that's a bad example because Texas just voted in a whole bunch of – well, it doesn't even matter. Be a Democrat or Republican. Introduce yourself. It doesn't matter. We need all the votes. So go in and introduce yourself and tell them who you are, what you do for a job, or if you lost your job. Tell your story to them. There is nothing like telling your story. It's the one you know best. You're not going to stumble. You're not going to make a mistake. It's not going to be a misinformation. It's your story.
Well, see, and that's the thing. I'm horrible when it comes to getting up in front of a crowd of people and talking about something I'm not passionate about. I'm horrible. I am thinking. Mm-hmm. But when you care about something so much and you know it like the back of your hand, you know, I could sit and talk about Barack Obama to people and be forward with people about that because I am so much more informed than your average person on issues that I felt comfortable doing it because it's something that I'm super passionate about.
Right.
You know, I had at one of my jobs, I had somebody tell me that they were afraid of Obama because they make over $250,000 and they have a bunch of student loans. I had the knowledge to know that those people don't have a net worth of $250,000, so they're not going to be taxed on that, on what they earn, with what they have. And just being able to do that from knowing the issue, it's the same way with this. When you know the issues, when you're passionate about them, you don't have to worry about the public part of it. It just comes.
Right. And so and you're not a professional lobbyist. You're there as a concerned citizen. You're a constituent. And they need to know that trans people live in their state. They need to know this. You can even go if you're a cross-dresser and you live, you know, nobody knows you cross-dress at work or whatever. You don't have to go as a trans person. You can say a family member or somebody very close to you is a transgender person.
And you can take part in the movement wherever you are. I just want to. The only reason I bring some of that stuff up, Ethan, is because I get people emailing me or telling me, "Wow, oh, I can't believe you did this," or "I can't believe you did that," and I'm like, "I can't either."
I can't either. Well, this and here's the thing, though. Too, I mean, this is where our allies do come in. You know, your brother, your sister, your mother, your father, your aunt, your uncle, your cousin, your partner, your therapist. Anybody can go and lobby or write a letter or make a phone call. on your
or mail out mailers or
right.
I mean, there's so many things to do
to help on behalf of the trans people they know and love. You know, I mean, we want people to understand that we are loved by our families. That there are people in our lives that care about us that aren't trans or gay or lesbian or any of those things that they may fear. That there is somebody just like them that is sitting across the desk that knows a trans person, that's related to a trans person, that maybe put the idea into a congressperson's head. That, you know, their cousin Sally might end up being a trans person, or that their son might end up being a trans person. And how are you going to treat them? Do you want them to not have employment rights? Well, it becomes very personal when you have somebody in your life that knows you and loves you go and lobby on your behalf. That's extremely powerful. So there is, allies are wonderful. We just don't want them telling us how to do it. You know, I mean, or that we doing it for us and then telling us, well, this was the best thing for you to do. You know, we can make those decisions. We can pick out our own clothes now. We can put on our own shoes and we can tie them. You know, we're big boys and girls and everybody in between.
And that is the point. I mean, back when the HRC Project Winback came out, the thing that bothered me with that wasn't so much what they had on their agenda, as much as they were trying to lead the agenda instead of have the agenda be led by trans people.
Right. You know, and one of those things, Marty, is leads me into this, too, the International Transgender Day of Remembrance. I absolutely love that we have allies coming to our events, helping us set up the events, even contributing to the cost of candles or a space to have the event, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, and they shouldn't be huge productions. It's a day of mourning. It's a day that we're mourning the loss of the people that we have lost. It's not a celebration. It's not a party. It's not something to fundraise. Right. It's not a day. What the hell is that? It's not a day to fundraise around. It's a day. It's not a day to fundraise around for your organization. It's a day that we are mourning the losses of the people in our community. People that have been brutally murdered. People that we've lost due to hatred and bias. And here's the thing. When you have, and like I said, everybody's welcome. Leave your organization's banner at home. We're not flying under your flag, period. It's not meant to help your organization fundraise. It's
truly about transgender people and mourning that the people that have died. You don't need a flag for that.
You don't. Well, it's not a. We don't need your organization's banner. You want to be altruistic. You want to come and help. If you truly care and want to do that, then it's not going to be rubber stamped by your organization to help you fundraise for it. Sorry. No. And you know, the fact that, you know, I had people contact me just this week, Marty, that said, you know, well, we're having a whole week's worth of events. And I said, I'm not interested in your week. I'm interested on the Day of Remembrance, what you're doing that day, and that's all. I'm not interested in your bake sale on Tuesday or your special book signing by the flavor tranny of the month on Wednesday. I'm interested in the candlelight vigil that you're having on Thursday. That's what I care about. And that's what they should care about, too. You know, it's not a production.
Well, and what drives that home for me personally is really you, because you had a member of your family brutally murdered, and it's not just an abstraction
It's not just a name.
It's not a name on a website. It's somebody that you love. It's not taking that kind of day of mourning and turning it, whether or not you mean to or not.
It's disrespectful.
That you're cheapening their memory and their how they died.
That's right, because they died being themselves. And you know, Marty, here's something that I hope smacks people in the face, is that more than half the people that were murdered in the United States alone this past year were ages 15 to 25. 15 to 25. So, you know, if you went to a funeral of somebody that you love that was brutally ripped from your life, from your family, would you fundraise for the Women's Softball League? Think about that. Would you do that? Is that what you want our young people to see? You know, I understand that one of the issues with our community is this. We only have the Transgender Day of Remembrance. That's our own. We don't have a day of celebration. And we need that. Just not. But they can't be on the same day. Have a day of celebration in June or a day when, you know, when school is still in session, so that everybody can be uplifting and be inspirational and be proud. Let's have one of those days. I love that. That's a great idea, but they can't be the same day. You know, they can't be the same day, nor should they. For celebrating our life, but not on the same day. You know?
Yeah, I mean, and this isn't something that should be branded or steered away from the truth in any way. I'm a purist that way.
Steering away from the truth has enabled our young people to be slaughtered as well. That's, you know, because people don't want to hear it. Well, it's a sad event. It's really hard to go to one of these. You know what? Tough shit. Next time it could be you.
Right.
Awareness, safety, all of these things. I'm not telling you to be afraid every time you turn the corner, but for God's sake, be aware of what's happening too. And help. Help so that it doesn't happen. You know, I can't change what's happened on that Remembering Our Dead website. I can't change the names on that list. I can't get them back. But what I can do is my damnedest to help that, to make sure that nobody else ends up there. Yeah.
That's why we're doing this.
Mm-hmm. That is.
Essentially, it's to better the lives of people that are severely oppressed.
Yep.
And thrown away.
And to speak for the people that cannot speak for themselves.
That's important. I mean, that's vital to our movement.
Yep. Not everybody can be an activist.
But everybody can be a part.
That's right.
They can take part.
Everybody. This is our movement, and we are all invited.
And there, you know, when it comes to all of this, no matter how wealthy, no matter how much you pass, no matter, you know, what your voice sounds like or what clothes you wear, these issues are your issues.
That's right.
And you don't think that they are because you have passing privilege, but, you know, there's plenty of people on that Remembering Our Dead list that were talking about.
Yes, there were.
I mean, look at how beautiful Angie Sabata and Gwen Araujo were. And they were very, they had casting privilege.
That's
and
right.
That is not going to stop you. It is not going to stop other people from hating.
It's a false sense of security. You know, the education, the work that we do in educating others is paramount. We need to do that to stop this from happening. For the statistics that I was just talking about, by the way, you can go to transgenderdor.org. That's transgenderdor.org. And Marty, by the way, is the one who donates that space to have that website up. And thank you, Marty, for doing that.
The least that I can do. I feel like what little that I do have that I want to share with other people and try to further us along. And, the transgender DOR list is something that's sacred, and I just think that it needs to be kept that way.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make this clear, too, for people that don't understand, because I got a couple of emails from people asking me, well, you know, what did you have to do with this list and what's going on with the other list? And I want to make this clear. It's still owned by Gwen Smith. Gwen Smith started this. She still owns it. And I mean owns it. I help. She has been on sabbatical for a couple of years, and God knows she needs it. And, you know, not much by choice, but you know, her life, her work, her blah, blah, blah. Oh, there's a bunch of things I'm not going to, you know. But, you know.
Right, that aren't important. I mean, she's given so much of herself to this community that I don't think anyone can say. Blame her or cast any aspersions on her.
No, and there's no blame to be had. There's nothing that she's done that's wrong or even, you know, to be construed that way. She needed some time, and good for her to know that. Wonderful. But her and I have been working together for the past 5 years or more, and we, I took over updating the statistics in 2002 from Monica Helms, who gave it up for the same for the very reason of it being so friggin' difficult. And I volunteered to take that, as difficult as it is, and it is, let me tell you. It's but I'm very passionate about hate crime issues, and I want to take care of this project. I want it to go on the way that it has. So that's what that's about. I don't have any. There's no issues between me and Gwen or this project and Gwen. It is Gwen's project. It always will be. If she comes back tomorrow, it's hers. I just give her everything and go back to, you know, helping Gwen, and that's it. That's the way that it is, and that's it. So I just wanted to clarify that for anybody who had any questions concerning this. And thank you, by the way, all the people out there that help with the Day of Remembrance event, that have that organize Day of Remembrance events, and that even if you look at this list once a year and recognize the horror, that's more than a lot of people do. And I got to tell you, it's very, very difficult, you know, very difficult. But it needs to be done. We have to understand what we're up against. And we have to, having that feeling when I go and visit a congress member, And I have a, and you know, I carry the vision of my aunt with me all the time, on top of the other people that I know that have been murdered, and the people aren't that just this previous year and the years before. There are 410 people on that list now that have been murdered that we know of, that we know of. So, you know, so thank you to everybody out there that do this. It's not an easy task. So Marty, are you at work yet?
No, I'm sitting in my car.
Okay, just making sure that everything's okay with you. So
I'm just listening to you talk.
I know, and you're my guest, and we're rambling on and on and on. Marty and I talk all the time. We talk every day, twice a day, sometimes more.
Usually when I'm in my car.
Yes, I'm used to her going to the drive-through, ordering, you know, food, or going to the deli, or, you know, all those wonderful Atkins things that we do.
That I've been off for about the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Well, you know, it is a difficult, I crave sweets sometimes now, where that, honestly, the weirdest thing was before I took testosterone, I didn't crave sweets. And that might be, though, because at the same time, I also kind of quit smoking within the next few years. So I'm not sure if it's my taste buds that have rejuvenated, or the idea that, you know, taking testosterone or what it is. But, man, I got to tell you.
Well, it could be you're just fucking nuts. I'm just throwing that out there.
I'm just a big fat man who wants sweets.
Me candy.
I want candy, yeah. But the fact that I know that's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's for me, going through this whole election cycle has been like, you know, when you're so tired, you don't even want to cook anything.
Yep, the fastest thing.
It's easy just to stop somewhere and say, I'm gonna pick something up.
Right. When you allow yourself to get so hungry that you'll eat anything. Yeah, that's why I started cooking things ahead of time so that I can just pull them out and pull them out of the freezer and pop it in the microwave and boom, you know, I have a meal.
See, that's the thing, though, Ethan. I mean, for the last month or so, I've just been on a mouse on a wheel, you know?
I do, because even like when we go on our way to Atlanta and stuff, you know, it was really difficult, and I maintained my diet the whole time that I was at Southern Comfort. There were desserts placed in front of me. Oh my God, I wanted to eat them so bad, but I didn't. It was pretty good. I mean, it was good to have that type of. And I fit into smaller pants now.
Isn't this interview about me?
Me, it's all about me. I love that. Julie Z does that song, by the way. It's all about me. But anyway, I'm putting this on up on the internet right away because people need to hear this whole thing. So
yeah. It's you and I joke, and it's hard to not go there. But
I know.
But this is our movement. God damn, and no one's going to do this for us. It's going to be something that we do for ourselves. And there's a few people that I've met in my life that have basically been with a partner that like transsexuals. Uh-huh. So they would buy them surgery. And I had a chance to do that once because I knew somebody that was basically a tranny chaser. And the thing that always got me with that is this is something that I want to do for myself. It's about having respect for yourself and making things happen for yourself instead of having somebody do it for you.
Oh, I agree. And, you know, I think that we're coming to that. I think that for a while we still had issues at large, not every individual, of course, but our community at large still had issues with the idea of deserving of rights. So we finally got past that. There were, you know, I mean, there's a lot of issues that go along with being beaten down by a society. And so the idea of rising up this way, I believe, is extremely courageous for all of us that do it.
We have a wonderful, wonderful group of people, though, coming up. The youth are a lot different, as you told me this morning. The youth are a lot different when it comes to this stuff.
Oh, they are. They are.
They don't have a lot of the same
baggage.
Hang-ups. Yeah.
The gender equality, or the equality among the sexes, is much more prevalent in our youth, and therefore I believe it's making gender equality and gender variant acceptance more out there. That's more, it's being more accepted based on that. And so I credit, of course, the work that's been done before even my mother. So, you know, it's definitely had its effect on the women's movement, the gender movement, the queer movement itself. All has had a very positive effect on our youth, and it's beginning to show and in huge steps, leaps and bounds, and nothing more more visible, I think, than what happened with the Employment Non-Discrimination Act this past last October, not last month, but in 2007, and the reaction from a whole generation, I want to say, a whole generation said no, and that was something, you know. So I think that was just the tip of the iceberg, and we're going to see a lot more of that. And I'm very proud, very, very proud.
I'm very proud and very excited and very, very thrilled. I'm ready.
Me too.
I'm ready to get to work and do this.
Me too. So let's go and kick some butt here. And I'm going to let you go, Marty. It's been fabulous talking to you, as always.
Thanks, Ethan.
And you'll be able to hear this interview. It'll be on transfm.org.
Transfm.org.
Transfm.org, that's right.
.org.
And by the way, for those of you who want to sign up for the conference, you can go to ifge.org and go to the bookstore.
Do I need to do that?
And log on to sign up for the conference. I don't know what happens. This is something I didn't ask Denise. I don't know what happens for presenters. So I'm going to have to ask her about that.
I'm definitely going.
So I need to ask her that even before I contact other people. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Going. So if you know, you want to bless yourself with my presence.
Well, I do, of course.
To go to the IFG conference.
Well, yes.
Tell me I'm
fabulous.
Fabulous, cool shit, whatever. Just go.
Tell her she's fabu.
Right.
Anyway, so
hey,
I'll talk to you later.
Fabu for me is a verb. Not an adjective.
See, I thought it was a fabric softener. And the spin cycle. Anyway.
Yeah, the comedy hour is... upon us, I think.
I use Fabu by Whisk. Anyway, I'll talk to you later, Marty. Love you.
All right. I love you. you too.
Bye-bye.